The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
What up, Primers? It's a best of best. The He Said, She Said edition. She being Vancouver Rise NSL champ Jess DeFilippo, and he being the legendary Aussie goalkeeper from the Prem and beyond, Mark Schwarzer. Enjoy! Now, where did I put my keys?
Aussie goalkeeper, play over 500 Premier League games, have over 150 clean sheets, and get forgotten by modern football fans. They go straight to the big names, Cech, Schmeichel, Alisson. So how does an Aussie last that long between the sticks in the hardest league in the world without any hype? Same story every season, no fuss, no drama. So how does a keeper that consistent end up being treated like he was just decent? Maybe because he wasn't flashy, no cameras chasing him, no Hollywood moments every week. Just positioning, handling, experience, the boring stuff that actually wins games. And here's what modern football doesn't tell you. Not every keeper needs to be a playmaker. Sometimes you just need someone who stops the fucking ball from going in the net. A proper Barclays-era survivor. So tell me, is Schwarzer one of the most underrated keepers the Premier League has ever seen? Or was he just some lucky Aussie who ended up getting a lot of appearances? Comment who you'd like to see next.
Yes, he's underrated. Mark Schwarzer. Mark, welcome to Footy Prime, mate.
Thank you for having me. I have actually seen that before. Someone sent it to me. I don't even know if the makers of it sent it to me. Someone sent it to me and I did see it and I did have a chuckle. And look, I answer that question, I was very lucky. I was definitely very, very lucky. I think anyone who played professional football is lucky to a degree. Obviously, you make your own luck as well. I'm a big firm believer of that. And it's also quite nice and to see stuff like that when people put things up about that. The only disappointment I have is that they missed a clip. Actually, they missed probably two clips. 1993 Socceroos against Canada. That's what they missed. That's the only thing I would say.
Well, that was your debut, right, for Australia off the bench because your keeper had been red carded. I think he fouled Dale Mitchell. On you come against this young willowy figure at the other end, Craig Forrest, and you boys found a way to win.
We did. I mean, we lost the first game in Canada, in Edmonton, my first time to Canada, actually. And I was sitting there, my first time involved with a full national team, sitting there on the bench next to Paul Wade, who actually was the captain of the Socceroos up for a long period of time. And he was actually dropped for that game. That was his very first game as captain of the national team to be dropped. So I was sitting next to him. He was my roommate. And we were counting the Aussie flags in the stands. And there was a decent amount. I think there was about 27,000 fans in the stadium. And there was probably about 10 or 15 Aussie flags. We were quite impressed with the number of Aussies that came out to watch us in Canada. And then all of a sudden, Robbie Sabika gets sent off. And it was like, oh, shit. Right. I'm on. And then the next minute, in a blink of an eye, I'm playing a World Cup qualifier, making my debut away from home in Canada in this hostile environment.
Hostile environment.
Yeah. Well, really not all that hostile.
No, it was for me at that time. And also the magnitude of it. A World Cup qualifier is a World Cup qualifier. And I was like 21 years old. So at that time, it was a big deal. And I'd only been playing in Australia, semi-professional. So it was the biggest game in my career up until that point.
I mean, that is something though, right? I mean, making a debut that way, they can only imagine the nerves. Hey, Craig, so Craig's short-term memory is awful, but his long-term memory is incredible. Do you remember that? You must do.
Are you kidding? Yeah, I remember vividly. You remember the weather in Edmonton too was terrible. I mean, the wind was insane. Yes. It was just whistling down one end. It was basically a game of two halves. And Nick Dazovic scored an own goal on a corner. It was whipped in and it just, the wind sort of took it. So he was like, whoa, trying to head it away. And he ended up heading it straight into the top.
Of course, it was an own goal, Craig. Of course, you would say that.
No. I'll vouch for it. It's true. Very true. Craig had no chance.
The goalkeeper union again, yeah, coming to each other's defense.
Yeah, and that World Cup qualifying campaign, I mean, obviously is much different now with all the teams that qualify. Both of us would have qualified by right in 2026. Back then, finishing second in CONCACAF gave us this quarter spot where we had to play Australia, and then home and away, we lose on penalties in Sydney. And then Australia, and you guys had to go along and beat or try to beat Argentina and Diego Maradona in a home and away match as well to then qualify. So you can see why Australia moved to the Asian region because of, you know, not having the automatic qualifying spot. And I think that was a big part of it. But you guys, what, 1-0 on aggregate on a fluke deflected goal in Buenos Aires, I want to remember, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, funny enough, just going back to that Canada game is that I was – 6 days before that game, I was in Australia coming back from a holiday in Germany. I did a trial in Germany, and I was back sort of starting to just go into the gym, getting ready for preseason in a couple of weeks' time. So I had this long program kind of sorted out. Okay, I'm going to start going to the gym. And then all of a sudden I get a call up. I'm being called up for the national team. So I hadn't trained for about 3 weeks. I'd been literally partying with one of my best mates in Germany for 3 weeks. My sister was living there. I just got back to Australia and just decided to start doing some stuff in the gym. And then all of a sudden I'm on a plane heading to Edmonton to go, okay, I'm number two. I'm thinking, all right, this is fine. I'll be okay. I'll find my feet. I'll get into it. And training was fine. And remember we trained on a public park.
Sounds about right in Canada, game. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, I just remember this park and people walking around, walking their dogs and the wind as well, like you mentioned, Craig, and then thinking, right, okay, this is an unbelievable experience. I'm loving being involved and going, right, okay, let's just, you know, this is a big game for us. And then all of a sudden everything happens and I come on and play this game. And that qualifier as well, like you said, we end up having to play only the third best team in South America, which happened to be Argentina. And it happened to be Diego Maradona's return after his first failed drug test. And at this stage, then Mark Bosnich came back for the first game in Sydney, which we ended up drawing 1-1. And Paul Wade played that game and he actually marked Diego Maradona out of the game, believe it or not, for literally 95 minutes of the game. There was one moment he got a bit of space, like literally half a meter space. He whipped in an unbelievable cross in a Batistuta who somehow used his telescopic neck to be able to go back away from goal and head it into the top corner, which was insane. It just shows you the level. And then, like Craig mentioned, we went to Buenos Aires. And I remember my vivid memory of Buenos Aires was actually I was on the bench for that game. Zabika was back in goal because Bozza didn't come back for it. And those were the days where there were no FIFA windows and players were missing out. And he was at Aston Villa and he was on a lot of pressure. So I remember we walked out on the pitch before the game. And the minute we walked out on the stadium, because the stadium was full about an hour and a half before kickoff. And I remember standing on the pitch and we could not understand each other. And you're leaning over, shouting in someone's ear and you could hardly hear each other. That's how loud and deafening and how intimidating that stadium was. And the fans were all throwing torn up paper and it was like it was snowing. It was incredible. And of course we lose to a kind of a really fluke goal. And we scored a goal actually, which was then ruled to be offside. So yeah, it was so close, but so far.
Yeah, but the World Cup worked out well for Maradona after that. So.
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean.
But still, you can say that you were there in the stadium, you know, on the bench and you're watching Diego Maradona. I mean, there's a presence about it, I imagine, that perhaps we haven't seen. I'm not sure even Messi has that.
No, I also think, like, you know, he was just that, he had everything, right, in terms of obviously regarded as one of the best players to ever play the game, the skills, the authenticity, the naughtiness, the kind of getting himself into trouble. He had everything. And I think he appealed to so many different backgrounds, different walks of life. And it was difficult to dislike him, even though I lost a lot of respect for him in terms of the drug elements and that sort of behavior. But in terms of as a footballer, you know, there isn't a person around, I don't think, that could say that he was just okay. I mean, the guy was one of the best, if not the best, to live on the planet playing football. And it was pretty crazy to see what it was like when he came to Australia, the attention at the time in Australia he received. And we're talking back in 1993, where football hardly received the attention that we get today, and certainly not the recognition of the level of which it takes to get to a World Cup and what it means and everything else. And so the attention that the game received at that moment was off the charts. And then even my own teammates, how in awe and how they literally were chasing him around in the airports trying to get photos and autographs off him, which was beyond me. Like I never did. And I was like, I'm just not doing that. Like that's firstly, it's uncool. And secondly, like, yeah, it's Diego Maradona and amazing, but I'm not chasing after him for a photo or an autograph. But yeah, it was pretty surreal. And after the game, we got invited to the same nightclub that Argentina were at, and all drinks were on Diego Maradona. So yeah, that just shows the level of the kind
and
of guy
that he was.
Your respect
came back, right, Mark?
Yeah,
you were like, oh, I'll get a photo.
I'm okay now with this guy.
You're okay. Yeah, you're so bad in the end.
And I was going to say, when you're in the stadium and the fans were throwing down those pieces of paper and it felt like it was snowing, he was right at home in that environment.
Yeah, for them, it's just it's just life, right? I don't think you've played a game of football until you've played a World Cup qualifier in South America. It is off the charts. I mean, I suppose the biggest comparison would be playing in Mexico. I can imagine playing in Mexico is a very similar thing. Like South America, having been, well, fortunate and unfortunate in some ways, but like being involved in Argentina and seeing that and experiencing that, not being on the pitch myself, but then twice being in Montevideo and Uruguay. And it's really, really difficult to explain what's at stake. The magnitude. We all know World Cup place is at stake, but for these people, it's more. And it's win at all costs. Doesn't matter how you do it. The intimidation from the minute we landed in the country in Uruguay was off the charts. The abuse, the people running from whatever they were doing as we were making our way from the airport to the hotel to abuse the bus, to show their anger at us being there and trying to put us off was something I'd never experienced in my life before. And then in the stadium, just the hostility. I said hostility in Canada, and obviously I was joking, but this was at another level altogether, and it was unbelievable. And I remember that the first time, as much as we were back in 2001, as much as we were a very experienced side and players that had played a lot of games in Europe and top level in Europe, there was intimidation. A lot of us just went, what have we just walked into? And that actually helped us for 2005. 2005, there was a vast majority of the squad that knew exactly what was being thrown at us. We knew before we arrived. There were some players that had no idea. And all of us were able to say to them, look, this is what you're going to expect. This is what's going to happen. And when they did it, we're like, yeah, that's just what they do. You know, they're a bit crazy, you know, and we dealt with the pressure so much better the second time around.
I want to bring you back. Sorry, Sharms.
So you could.
I just wanted to say, Mark, when you were thrown in after that red card as a young man, inexperienced, you're green versus Canada, what did that experience do for you in terms of your career trajectory? Did you feel like, oh my God, thank Christ it's done? Or was it, I belong here?
I certainly didn't feel like I belonged there at that stage. I think it was still an element of trying to work out whether or not I was good enough to play that level. In my own head, like I believed in my ability to a degree, but still playing international football and World Cup qualifiers is different. It's different to playing international friendlies. It's different to playing your domestic league and playing in finals, and which I'd already done before. I'd played in the final, won the title in Australia, which was big for me then. But the international level is another step up, another five steps up. And it's because of what's at stake. The minute a game is associated with a World Cup, it takes on a completely different meaning. It is the weight of every registered footballer playing in the country, every football fan that is behind the team, and players, us, as like me growing up as a kid in Australia, I dreamt of playing in a World Cup. We'd only played at one World Cup prior to that in 1974. I was 2 years old, so obviously I knew nothing. I don't have any recollection of it, of course, but obviously I knew a lot about it and I know my history with the national team. So, and we had so many failed campaigns. So the minute a World Cup qualifier is there, there was that pressure of failed campaigns each time. And now we just need to get over that hurdle. We need to qualify. And every game is working towards that. So the minute there's that under the umbrella of World Cup qualifier, you feel the pressure and you know what's at stake.
20 years since that goal, the Uruguay game, which really, I would say, it defined a class of footballers in Australia. It was such a great moment for the country. You're now in the Hall of Fame of Australian sports, let alone just football, which says everything. But by that point, you know, you'd established yourself in the 90s. You've been playing top flight football with some big clubs. The 90s Premier League, you mentioned how you shunned the attention to a certain degree compared to a lot of players, but that was the era that, I know it's the first Premier League era, but prior to that, you know, we had George Best, who was a rock and roll footballer. But these players, the Robbie Fowler, the Liverpool in the white suits, really kind of elevated this feeling of arrogance in English football. But then yourself and Craig and these guys kind of under the radar, the 90s was the best Premier League era, right?
It's like, you know why? I suppose there's a lot of nostalgic towards it. And because it was the change, wasn't it? It was the change of the league and the way in which it was elevated, the TV rights, the money, the attention globally, it took it to a different level. Sky was probably the beginning of the rise of the Premier League, their involvement in the game, the broadcasting of it. So it elevated the game to a different level. And then you started to have these superstars starting to emerge. You know, David Beckham, you know, Thierry Henry coming across, the Bergkamps. The best players in the world were starting to come to the UK and wanting to play in the Premier League. Money went through the roof. Support for games. There were waiting lists at games. You couldn't get into games unless you had tickets. So there was this real euphoria and hype around the game exploding and trying to become or going on the course to becoming the biggest and most prestigious league to play in Europe, and or if not the world. So for me, and I speak for myself, like I dreamt of playing professional football, and one of my biggest dreams was to play in the Premier League, to play, well, the English First Division as a kid growing up, but then also to play in the Premier League once that was established, because it was the one league I thought as a kid and also even throughout my whole life, and I still feel that today, that goalkeepers really do get respected. Goalkeepers actually get appreciated of how valuable they are. And other leagues have caught up more now, but previously it was more like, well, we'll just put someone in there and, you know, he's useless to play in outfield, but it's not that important, put him in goal. Whereas the Premier League, I always felt that goalkeepers were equally important. Every team really knew the importance of having a really good goalkeeper, someone they could rely on. So I felt there was a really good opportunity for goalkeepers to express themselves, to establish themselves and actually get recognition. And it wasn't about being a superstar, but it was more about being appreciated for the job that you were doing. Because we all know we're different. It's all a very difficult, very specialized job. But in the past, it was always like, oh, it's a goalkeeper, just do your job. You know, what do the goalkeepers know? You can't kick the ball. He can't do this. He's in there because he's not a very good footballer. He's a failed footballer who plays in goals. So, you know, and you know, it's all the cliches and all that sort of stuff. So the English Premier League or English First Division and then the Premier League, for me, always, always appreciated goalkeepers, always respected them and always understood the value of a good goalkeeper.
What do you find, Mark, you know, being an Australian playing over there and the challenges of that? Because back in those days too, the English goalkeepers were known as the best in the world. Like it was, you know, there was 10 goalkeepers you could say could easily step into the England national team. Did you find a little bit different? Because I did, certainly being a Canadian, trying to break into that and battling that as well. Did you find that there was challenges being Australian as well?
Not for me personally, because I was fortunate enough, Australians were fortunate enough, we had Mark Bosnich out there. Mark Bosnich was the pioneer of goalkeepers in England, and if not around the world. So we had outfield players and, you know, had reasonable levels of success in various different countries around Europe. But Mark Bosnich was the first Australian goalkeeper to really kind of open people's eyes up to other goalkeepers coming from Australia. And he really opened the door, and his level of performances really made people stand up and take notice. And for me, then it was for my era, players coming through, there was no surprise, and it was a kind of almost like an expectancy that what are you guys doing? You guys are always producing pretty decent goalkeepers, you know? And that's how I think for us and for me coming through to the Premier League and into England, it was a pretty straightforward one. And obviously the close association between Australia and the UK, I mean, culturally, there are obviously key differences, but there's a lot of similarities as well. The sense of humor is very similar as well. So a lot of that was pretty easy to settle into. Excuse me. It was very easy sort of to come into. And I felt that transition was quite simple. But again, you had to back it up with performances.
Do you find that as a game evolves, it's always evolving, all the positions evolve, you know, fullbacks aren't what they once were, centre-backs now carry the ball, you know, throughout the entire team, except for kind of in goal, where, yeah, you might make more short passes nowadays than you used to, but it's still very similar. Is that the one position that you could say Mark Schwarzer and Craig Forrest could still be playing in the Premier League in today's football as they were back in the 90s and early 2000s?
I think there's definitely... would be opportunities for goalkeepers like us, but the game has evolved a lot. So, but I think that the opportunities are limited now because of the way teams play. A lot of teams want to play that almost that extra outfield player playing in goal. So that you have to be exceptional with your feet. I mean, let's not forget, right? So Craig and I came through, James, at a period of time when the most significant changes in goalkeeping rules and regulations happened during our period of time of development. So we got it kind of, I think, we were kind of fortunate in some ways. It happened early enough for us to adjust. So, and the examples are, you know, the back pass rule. So the simple thing of getting the ball back in the goal, in the 8-yard box. And in the day when I was playing coming through, you used to be able to pick the ball up, put it on the ground, roll it with your hand around the 8-yard box, then pick it up again. And then it was like, and everyone could keep playing the ball back to you. You pick it up. And then it was like 4 steps. Then it was 8 seconds. And then, you know, the back pass rule came into it. So, and I was, I think, about 15 or 16 or maybe 17 or so when the actual last big change came, which was the back pass rule. And that still was enough time to adjust and to focus a lot more on being able to kick the ball out. Because prior to that, you did no work. I certainly did next to no work with the outfield players. It was just goalkeeping work. And at the end, all you do is jump in and play games, play small-sided games. And I think from that moment onwards, there was a whole rethink of what goalkeepers need to do and how they need to practice and how they need to step up to this level and to be able to adjust to playing now with this simple rule, even a simple, seemingly simple change of rule, but it also killed a lot of goalkeepers' careers overnight, the change of the rule.
Mm-hmm. Should mention before we forget, James Johnson has a very important role here in Canadian soccer. He says hi. We had him on the show a couple weeks ago.
Wonderful.
Mentioned he'd be on the show. So he says, hi. Mark's a great guy, he says. We worked together a little bit in the past. So before I forget,
thank you.
He says hi.
Obviously, right. His role at the FA as well. So he's obviously an ex-footballer who played at lower levels, at a younger age in the national teams, and then obviously went into the business world afterwards and was back in Australia for a number of years and was very much part of that whole group of leading the federation for the Women's World Cup, Asian Cup prior to that, or not he was there after that. But so he had a big part to play and helped with the development of football in Australia.
Do you think there's some challenges in Canada that are similar to Australia and that the synergy between him and the two countries will work well for Canada?
There's definitely similarities. This goes without saying. I mean, like, you know, geographically, we're both massive countries. The populations are for our country size. We're spread out a lot. There's a geographical element. There's a competition with other sports. Huge competition with other sports, not seen as the main sport in the country. So yeah, absolutely. And of course, in a lot of ways, there's similarities in culture and personalities. Even though some would say you're probably more American than you are Australian or English, right? So, I mean, there's got to be some negatives, right?
Mark Schwartz is a dick, everybody.
You're not invited back. It's been fun, Mark.
Fuck you, man.
I feel like I'm in DC again, Wonga.
Yeah, you are.
By the way, how was that? Any opportunity Wonga has to mention he was in DC for the draw. I think actually he has two lovely daughters. The highlight of Wonga's life was being at the FIFA World Cup draw.
I tell you what, bumping into Craig and then meeting Wonga was our highlight as well, and it actually helped us survive the days in DC during a let's just say, a very, very interesting World Cup draw and circus.
Yeah, there's absolute legends there. I mean, everybody you could possibly think of, Baggio and, you know, and Stoichkov.
I mean, do you, Craig, do you go there? And, like, because I've been to a couple of these events. First time I've been to a World Cup draw as a guest of FIFA, but I've been to a few other events for FIFA. And every time I go, I still just go, oh, wow. Oh, there's so-and-so, there's Ronaldinho, there's, you know, Baggio, there's whatever, you know, Christian Vieri, who I grew up with and played in Australia with, but he can't remember me, which is kind of another story altogether. but anyway, yeah. Do you feel that, like, surreal? Do you actually just stand there sometimes and just go, oh, wow, like, this guy's like one of the best players ever to play on the planet?
Yeah, it was insane. It was unbelievable. It really was. But out of all those guys, the one guy that most people remembered is Wonger.
Absolutely. It's true. Yeah, it's true. We actually, my wife and I were just talking about on the very last night, we're up in the our restaurant area there, and our friends came up as well. And it was like, oh, we need to get our friends up. Oh, Wonger, yeah, take mine. Yeah, we're gonna, everyone was up there, and we had a great night. And maybe we probably annoyed a few people with being quite loud.
Wonger? No.
No. But I put it down to, we were just having a great time and they were a bit boring.
I tend to agree. And people don't know this, but Mark, at the beginning, I'm just going to pivot a little bit. Bring us back to that that little review that was shown at the beginning or played at the beginning. Mark, that's Mark, how he puts himself to bed. He listens to that. He was lying when he said, I kind of knew about that. This is what he replays before bed. It's his, I'm good enough. I'm strong enough. Yeah. I can make the next day. It's his Stuart Hatton. Like,
I'm fucking Mark Schwarzer.
That's right. I can do this.
Well, sometimes I have to look at that and go, yeah, that actually was me in a previous life. Because I look at it two different ways. Like, Craig, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I look back at that. Amy, you the same, right? So you look back at that almost like a different life, a different world. Then you go, yeah, I was in that. And it feels almost like, it feels very, in some ways it feels very distant to me, but in other ways it feels very, very close. But, you know, there's just, it's just a bit weird sometimes.
Mark,
go ahead, Moore.
No, you've kept your feet. You live in London or close to London?
Yeah, I did, just on the outskirts. Yeah, within kind of like, you know, the greater London area, yes.
But you've kept your feet on the ground in Australia too with the Federation. Tell us about why and how you're doing it and what kind of goals it's kind of given you on your post-playing career. And, you know, and then we can talk about your broadcast too.
It's just more recent. Again, you know, it's like any federation, you know, there's elections, there's new chairman, new board of directors, there's different directions. And I've always had a pretty good relationship with the federation, throughout my whole career, which is always wonderful to have. And I think more recently, there's been a change of leadership over the last couple of years. And, Heather Garriott, who's an ex Matilda, Amy, I'm sure you're aware of Heather, and you know she's a legend of the women's game in Australia, she's very much involved. She was a board director at the FA, and she was very keen on getting me involved on a committee which we have. It's called the Football Development Committee. So there's three at the moment. Currently there are three either ex-players or players who are people who are involved in football in some capacity. So at the moment we have an ex sort of strength and conditioner who's been involved on and off for the national team set up for about 15 years. There's two of us as ex footballers. So one woman and one man. And so we are very much involved with any football related issues within the federation or development that the federation want to put forward. And it's run by the Football Development Committee, which also is made up with a couple of board directors. And Heather is very much at the fore of that. And what's really, really positive about it, and this is one of the reasons why it's the main reason why I actually agreed to be part of it, was that they were going to listen. The board were going to listen to it, not just as a token gesture. They are seriously going to listen to our recommendations. And I thought that was really positive, and having an ability to be involved within the national organization, the direction of the game, and also the continuous continuing success of the women's and the men's game, because all the decisions, anything related to football is run through this football development committee. So to be part of it and having the vast experiences that I've had in football, I think it's always good to have people that have different eyes, different ears, and different types of experience, but ones that is very much the core of what you're discussing. And in the past, we probably were guilty of not having that. And so I think being part of that and having an opportunity to give back and feel that football has come such a long way, but it's also got such a long way still to go. And we have so many issues still, like everyone, and I'm sure Canada and Australia in so many ways are similar. and we're working towards trying to bridge gaps, not only from without in our own game, because we in the past we've been very, very good within our own game to kind of be separated, not be united, not be working together as a game as a whole across the country. And there's no one reason for it, but there certainly hasn't been enough dialogue and communication and togetherness in the game. And then that filters all the way through to government level, state and government level, which is, you know, we have the most participated footballers, people playing football in Australia by a long way, by almost double, or I think more than double. I think it's like nearly 2 million participants of footballers in Australia across all walks of football. And when you just talk, just a quick insight into it, that when you talk about the codes, Australian rules, and then rugby league as an example, their funding per capita is more than sixfold or fivefold per person. And they have less than half of participants in the game. And I find that really difficult to stomach. You know, we're talking about taxpayers' money. We're talking about a country that's rich in sport. We're talking about a sport that is played by any other, more than, I'm talking to the believers, right? But we're talking about a sport that's played by more countries. It's the most competitive and the most difficult sport to be one of the best in the world at. And we're not at the level we should be in terms of respect and funding. And so being an ex-player, having some credibility in the game, you mentioned before Australian Sport Hall of Fame. That night in 2005 was a very big reason as to why I was inducted into that Sport Hall of Fame. That is also the beginning of football being recognized and accepted and given the credibility it deserves. And that's what I want. I want football to continue to be respected and given the place in the world that it deserves in Australia. And I say in the world, but in Australia. And I want to be part of that going forward and trying to continue to push people to do that.
You could be talking about Canada.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. Everything you said there is the same here. Only I think Australia is a little bit more mature as a sporting nation. You've always loved your sports. It's been a big part of the culture there. It's not quite the same here just yet. But I've got to ask you, I mean, growing up in England, Australia smashed England in every sport pretty much. Who was your hero? I mean, the David Campeses, the Michael Liners, Shane Warnes, Steve Waugh's. I mean, all these guys just terrified me as an Englishman. Outside of football, who was the hero for Mark Schwarzer growing up?
See, I was also a big rugby league fan. See, like this is the thing, right? When I talk about going back to the football and the respect and the parity and funding, for example, I want parity. I believe in there's a place for all of us. I believe there's a place for every sport. They're very different. I'm a great example of it. I love football. It's my passion, but I also love watching rugby league, and I love watching cricket, and I'm a big supporter of the teams and my teams. And so why can't we coexist? Why can't we coexist fairly? You know, and I believe that there is room for it. There's a place for it. What the problem is now at the moment, the balance is so lopsided, and football is the one that's suffering the most from it. So going back to your original question now is that growing up as a kid, rugby league was probably the main sport for me locally that I supported. And I supported a team called Balmain Tigers, which is now called West Tigers. So they amalgamated with another club, playing in the NRL, National Rugby League competition. And a guy growing up, one of my sort of favorite players was a guy called Wayne Pearce. So you guys probably would never have heard of him, but I was fortunate enough in September, again, was invited back and asked if I would like to be inducted into a Hall of Fame. Another one, which was 2 in 1 year, which is just madness. You're not involved in any, and all of a sudden you get 2 in 1 year. And it was a stadium that we actually played the game, Stadium Australia, where we played the game against Uruguay. They actually had their inaugural Hall of Fame. And John Aloisi and I were both inducted for football. And I'm running around in circles here because this is another indicator of how far the game has come. On the night, they inducted 10 Olympians because the Olympic Games in 2000 were held at that very stadium. And then within the precedent of the Sydney the Stadium Australia precedent, was then you're eligible to be inducted into this Hall of Fame. So Ian Thorpe was one of them, a whole lot of swimmers. So there were 10 Olympians initially. They had their place on the stage, their moment, which was really nice, interviewing and so forth. Then it went on to the rugbies, so the rugby league and the rugby union codes. And then there was a third section, and they were all on stage, all very samey. And then we had the football section. So the picture is you're walking out onto Stadium Australia. There's a goal. There's a football goal in the left-hand side of the pitch, which is where the penalties were taken and where Johnny scored the winner, and I saved 2 penalties. And then Sage was at the very end of on the right-hand side at the other end. So we were then met on a different stage, and we walked down to it. And this is all during the ceremony, and we talked about the moment, interviewed. And this is what I'm trying to get at, is that football had its own place. There were two of us. We were the fewest number of people to be inducted from our sport, and we had our own place, and we had our own sort of 15, 20-minute segment of introducing us, talking through the moment, reminiscing, and talking about football and that moment, what it meant for football. And that's where I'm saying, like, that's where football has evolved, and that night would allowed that to happen. And that's what made that very special. So Wayne Pearce was there that night. That's what I was getting at. I almost lost my train of thought there. Wayne Pearce was there that night, and I got to meet him. And that was the very first time I got to meet him.
That wasn't your point, Mark. Your point was Hall of Fame. Say Hall of Fame 8 twice. More times.
It's actually, I'm not embarrassed by it. It's not something I don't really talk about very often. I'm honored by it. I just see him as that in particular, that for me was, it's not just, so myself and Johnny Aloisi were recognized, and it's kind of in some ways a little bit unfair because it should have been the team. It should have been the team that should have been recognized, in my opinion, because yes, we had standout moments, but it doesn't happen if for 90 minutes we don't win or 120 minutes we don't win the game 1-0. And if three other guys, because Mark Viduka missed, I like bringing that up, that three of the other guys scored their penalties. If had they have not scored their penalties, I wouldn't have had my moment. Johnny wouldn't have had his moment. So, and if I wouldn't save the penalties, Johnny wouldn't have had his moment. So all of it is intertwined. And if we're going to be the ones that are going to be accepting it, where they're representing football, and we're representing football in Australia, and that's what makes it special. And hopefully it's the beginning. That was just my, a long, long-winded answer, sorry. But yeah, Wayne Pearson got a chance to meet him. And then going to cricket, I probably would say I was a massive fan of the Waugh brothers. So Mark Waugh, Steve Waugh. I've met Steve Waugh a couple of times, Mark Waugh a few times as well. I met a lot of them, Adam Gilchrist, Glenn McGrath. Shane Warne, unfortunately, I never got a chance to meet, but absolute legend of the game, of course, goes without saying. Adam Gilchrist was at the Australian Hall of Fame, and I got a chance to chat with him. And, you know, it's crazy. You know, we're all big fans of everyone, and they love football. And that's the thing. Everybody loves everyone. Everyone loves their sports and respects their sports. It's just at a national level at a government level, we're not given the same as the rest.
So that's probably us. Your teammates were chasing after Maradona, hoping for a picture, and you wanted no part of it. Did the camera, did the phone come out to take a picture with your childhood idol?
Yes, we had a photo. Yes. Of course. Yeah. And I don't, and the thing is, I don't ask for photos from people. I don't ask. There's very few times I actually ask for photos from anyone. There's only very, very specific people.
Like Wonger.
Absolutely.
There might be.
But like, you know, when it comes to your sporting fans, and they also say you should never meet your sporting idols, right? And there is a lot of truth in that. I have to say, there is a lot of truth, because I've met two people that I really looked up to, and I kind of wish I hadn't met them. So yeah, I'm not going to name names because it's not right. But I very, very disappointing.
I will say I've got a picture somewhere of me and Bruce Grobbelaar, speaking of
legendary goalkeepers. And, wonderful.
Bruce is great. Bruce is great.
Yes. And well, that's the thing, though, right? It's all great, James, when they're really good people, right? Yeah. And you only know after the affair, right? And the problem is if you meet them and then go, oh, geez, that's just ruined my whole like childhood or my adulthood, even my young adulthood or my career, where you looked up to someone and you meet them and you kind of have various experiences with them and you just go, wow, no, I wish I'd never met you.
I'm Charlie's. Well, listen, we could keep talking for a long time, but we have to go. But thank you so much for this. Really enjoyed it. We'll have to get you on again at some point.
Love to.
Listen, there's a World Cup not just around the corner, so maybe around then.
Well, I'll be there. I'll be in Miami. I'm doing eight games for the World Cup. So I'm 7 games in Miami, 1 game in Atlanta. So I'm working for HBS. Craig's doing the same thing. So, looking forward to it. It'll be really good fun and hopefully.
Yeah,
pleasure in Miami.
Hopefully our paths will cross at some point.
That could be dangerous.
Maybe the final. Who knows?
Who knows? The only thing is I'm doing 3rd and 4th playoff in Miami. And that's the only thing. So I don't know logistically also getting a ticket. And you know how the whole FIFA thing works is a ranking thing, right? If you're not, if you're like a multiple World Cup winner, a World Cup winner, finalist and country you played for, like, I mean, we're right down the bottom, Craig.
Yeah.
Well, we got a chance.
Could be Australia and Canada in that match. You never know.
That would be amazing. But even just from tickets, you know, there's a whole hierarchy. You're a FIFA legend, but we're a FIFA legend. I think C-class ranking. I think we are, Craig. And then there's the other bands. Yeah.
A tiered FIFA. That's so
FIFA. There is. There's an unspoken tiered rank. I've been told this.
Yeah. So you were in the same room as Roberto Baggio, but there was like a velvet.
Yeah. Or a glass partition.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's say we were in the same hotel, right? But I'm sure we're in very different rooms.
Hey, listen, you didn't miss a penalty in the World Cup final. So, hey, there's
always
that.
I didn't play in a World Cup final to miss one.
Mark, thanks so much, mate. Really enjoyed this.
Pleasure. Pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mark.
Really appreciate it.
That is Mark Schwarzer, Australian legend, now footy prime legend, I think it's fair to say. Great, great stories. And it is amazing, the similarity. I've always thought that between Australia and Canada.
Okay, here we go. And we can hear some lovely music in the background too, but we can hear you really well as well, which is good. So this is the broadcast, and we have a very special guest today. I'm Amy Walsh. We've got Signe Butler. We've got Shireen Ahmed, and we have inaugural season champ, the winner of the Diana B. Matheson Cup, Jess DiFilippo of the Vancouver Rise. Welcome, Jess, to the broadcast.
Thank you. What an introduction. Thank you.
I pared it down a little bit. I trimmed it. It was even lengthier and more glowing. Yeah, in my rough draft.
Okay, restart one more time.
I think we're good. We'll move on. We don't have you for too long because you said after 20 minutes you will start to charge. So.
off video, off the recording.
But I like it. I like the agency and the self-promotion. Big fan. But we're also big fans of yours. So before we launch into the sophomore season, coming back as returning champs, you had a hell of a year yourself. How has your off season been? What have you been doing? How have you been spending your time? Because you were not, like a lot of players in the Northern Super League in a first year, you were not a rookie. I mean, everybody technically was because it was the first year of the NSL. But you have also played elsewhere as a professional. So what have you been up to?
Yeah, I mean, off season, it was a long season. So I think the first 2 or 3 weeks, I really took the time to relax and traveled a little bit to Europe and took the time to just, you know, enjoy the win coming off the trophy win and taking it all in. And then it was grind mode. I think I didn't start the season last year the way I wanted it to. I think I had some injuries and it prolonged throughout the whole first half of the season. And so I think really when I flourished was in the second half of the season when I wasn't in pain from injuries or dealing with anything. And so this season or this off season, I really just wanted to come into preseason ready, fit. I didn't want it to take the last 2 months to be fit. I wanted to already be fit and be able to like really grow on already what I had finished last year. And so, yeah, I came back early. I came back in January. I've been here. I've been training with boys for a whole month. And then when the team arrived, I hopped into training with them. And, yeah, I feel good. I feel fit. I'm ready. Yeah, and I'm hungry. So it's been a good off season.
I love that, saying all the right things. And correct me if I'm wrong, but did you celebrate a birthday yesterday?
I did.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah, everyone kept asking how old I was getting, and I didn't want to say the number. I was like, oof.
Oh, come on.
You can say it here to save space because we got you by at least 20 years.
I was like 25 in the real world. Like, that's a great age, you know? But it's like when you get into the athletic world, you're like, you count the years you could keep playing and that you're like still a baby. And I remember signing my first contract at 21 thinking like, I have so many years left. Like, I'm just starting and it's like time's flying by, you know? So, yeah, it's crazy. Like, looking back on it, it's incredible. Just the last 4 years where I've been and where I am now.
That's amazing. Can I hop in here, Ames? I just wanted to ask you, of course, happy birthday to the Max, because we're big birthday people around here. We love that. Is there a moment in particular that was super joyous for you? I know the championship was massive. I ran into you in the hallway afterwards. I don't know if you remember. You were fantastic. But like, other than that, was there another particular moment of joy that you had in the season? Could be something small that you've kept close to your heart.
Ooh, this is a good one. Good question. I think our second round in the playoffs against Ottawa and, you know, like being scored on early in the game and having to come back and seeing the team just fight back and seeing players who were so supportive throughout the whole season and not getting a lot of minutes being subbed in and scoring really big PKs for us. I think that was really special. Also, anytime like I went to Toronto or Montreal, like I always had family there. And I think I scored a lot against Toronto for some reason. And my family, my brother was always there. So I think like after the game, giving them a big hug was always really something that stuck with me, because in Europe, you know, like you don't always get that opportunity to go hug your parents at the end of the game. So that was cool this season.
I need to jump in here because you brought it up first. We didn't have to, but that rivalry with AFC Toronto, you didn't have to do a whole lot to stoke it and didn't have to do a whole lot for you to show up in big moments for your team. So you talked a little bit about playing in front of your friends and family and using that as motivation. But what did you think, just trying to get your candid response here, about the rings that AFC Toronto received for being season champs?
Can I plead the fifth? Is that possible on this podcast?
It is not. I'm afraid to say it is not possible.
I mean, hey, they had a great season. They won the Shield. They were consistent throughout the first season. And yeah, I mean, they deserve it. I think, obviously, I would love to see just one team get a ring for every NSL season. I think it makes it a little bit more special. But yeah, I think it's for the league and for the clubs to figure out which team deserves it more. Yeah, I'll leave it at that.
That's so well done, Jess. No,
very diplomatic.
You are so media trained.
Good job. You talked a little bit, take you back to like last year, and you talked a little bit about this, about the start of the season and how it wasn't ideally where you wanted to be. Mm-hmm. Was there a moment in the season that you felt like, oh, I'm back?
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, when was this? I think when we came back from the break, we had like 10 days off, and I remember like mentally, physically, my body was drained from coming back from the injury. Like, I was not having fun, honestly. Like, I was struggling through the first half of the season. I think having that 10-day break, and I went home, I was with family for the whole 10 days. I had dinners with them, and I think I came back just like completely refreshed, and I was like, I'm ready to go, you know? Like, I have nothing to lose now. And so Yeah, I think I don't remember our first game back, but I just remember like everyone having so much energy on this team. I think we all supported each other and said, okay, this is a brand new season basically for us. And I think scoring a goal at home as well, it was my first goal at home. And I think hearing the crowd just go crazy for it. And I think, I mean, it's not a normal goal. I think I scored from pretty far, which is like the reaction was extra extravagant. So yeah, I think it was, I got the motivation and the confidence from my teammates and yeah, just finding myself throughout the season. I think when Latifah came as well, I think we were able to complement each other really well. And I was able to find myself in a different position, which I think I feel more comfortable being under a nine and being able to feed people as much as score. And so, yeah, I think we saw that in throughout the season at the end.
I do want to ask you about Latifah, because you have a connection, you played together before. When she came in, it's like the spark that happens, because that's what it looked like and that's what we observed and that's what happened. Was it really that seamless, or were you guys training extra hard to bring that? Like, tell me a little bit about that process from the inside.
Yeah, I mean, we started playing together or against each other at first when we were 11 years old. And I think over time we played together and we've just had a friendship even off the field. Like, we were driving to practices together when we were young. And I think before she even came here, before she talked to anybody, she called me. Like, she was like, hey, is this somewhere I want to be? Is this somewhere I want to grow? And I said, come, like, please come. Like, we're going to kill it. You know, like, we haven't played in so long. And I think we're very competitive people in like at our base. And so we have a lot of respect for each other and pushing each other, but also competing against each other. I think like we bring out a better version of ourselves and we try and do as much as we can. So yeah, I think the connection is there because there's a friendship off the field. And I think there's a competitiveness between each other on the field. And yeah, I think that's any coach could ask for that, you know? And I think when there's respect, success follows.
There might not be a better attacking tandem in the league right now that one. Well, maybe AFC wants to have a word, Hunter Okoronkwo, but you guys are right up there, Abdu and DiFilippo. Like, you guys were dominant. And I wanted to ask you, like, not as a first-year professional, as I've already alluded to, but what is your leadership style? How do you lead, especially going into this year where you've lost big pieces of the team? You have Shannon Weller, who is still out. Sam Chang, your captain from last year, made the move to AFC, and she's injured now. You won't get to suit up against her. But when are you at your best, and what leadership style do you assume?
Yeah, I think this is something even like throughout the years I've had to adapt, and you know, every team is different, but I'm a fiery person. Like, I want to keep the standards high, and I think I'm like the outspoken one. I hold people accountable, and I think in trainings I push the level, and I think I try and make as many friends as I can off the field. I think it's super important to have relationships that are not just in the facility and in meeting rooms. So yeah, I think I try and do a little bit of everything, but my personality and the way I approach practices and my intensity, I think I try and influence the people around me more than anything. And yeah, I think on the field, I'm very fiery, like I said, but I always tell people, like, have fun, you know, like at the end of the day, like, we can train as hard as we can. And I think that's important, but I want everyone to have fun. And I want to portray that message. Yeah, I think it's just like what I've learned over the years is that no matter where I was, if I always had fun, then I was okay. You know, it's a game at the end of the day. Yeah. And yeah, I think everyone like brings a creativity to them, and I want everyone to shine. And I think everyone's here for a reason. I try and tell people that. And I think, yeah, I try and connect with people off the field so that they have a little bit more respect when we get on the field, if I do say something to them, and I do try and help them. Yeah.
So on that point, you do have some new players on the roster this year that have been welcomed in. I'm sure you probably know some of them in passing, but in particular, you have two Colombian players. So I'm wondering how the dynamic is in terms of, you know, helping them fold into the program and also communicate with them at the same time.
Yeah. So luckily, my time in Spain was was good because I learned Spanish a little bit when I was there. So I've actually been able to connect with them and translate a little bit for them throughout practices, but they're super open. They want to learn. I think it's really cool to have just different people from different cultures. I think they bring something to the team. Yeah. And they bring a creativity that, you know, that is different than Canadians. And I think it's really special to our club right now. And yeah, they're just joyous people. So I think everyone has brought them in with open arms. In our meetings, sometimes they're looking back at me like, hey, can you translate? I'm just like a little bit later. But yeah, they're super cool. And honestly, I think it's added a lot to our roster.
What type of short-term goals do you maybe have for yourself this year? You mentioned first half of last year, maybe not your best. Second half, you really surged into form. I'm imagining you want to just pick up where you left off, but like, what's on the docket for you, Jess DiFilippo, the person, the player for year two in NSL?
Yeah, I think I want to go into the season, obviously better than I left last year. I think I want to come out as a confident player who can play a lot of minutes and can have an impact. I think my goal is always to get a call to the national team. Obviously that's something that as a little kid I've always wanted and been through the youth system. So I'm hoping that, yeah, this year I can make a breakthrough and make an impact and show the world, honestly, not just Canada, that Jess DiFilippo can play and yeah, score goals. So yeah, while I'm doing that, like, I also want to have fun. I want to enjoy the journey and I, you know, not take anything for granted because I know that last year wasn't always perfect, you know. So yeah, I want to go in this year having fun and enjoying every moment.
You know, you mentioned the national team and I think of a national team player that has had a lot of goals via the head lately, and that's Vanessa Gilles. What's the percentage of goals that you've scored off your noggin?
Oh, last year I think at the start it was only headers and I was like to everyone, I was like, I need to show people I could score with my feet. Like, as a striker, I can't just be scoring with my head. But yeah, Vanessa Gilles, like every game she's scoring with her head. And I remember one national team camp that I went to and I was like, wow, like this person, like she's amazing, you know? Like, and this was before she was a starter. And I was like, this player is going to be fantastic. And she was so good with, like, in the box. And so, yeah, I think it was like, okay, I got to work on my game too. Like, if this is the defense that I'm going up against, like at the professional league and at the national level, like I need to up my game. And so, yeah, she's a great example of someone who is fiery in the box.
We know you can score with your feet. We love that. The 45 yarder that you talked about earlier was like epic. So yeah, there you go.
I think in practice, like weeks after, people were just like, between drills, like trying to hit it in training just to see like, oh, I can do it. But it was low key. Unless you hit it, like you wouldn't say anything that you tried it. So it was kind of fun.
Well, I mean, I wanted it to become like a TikTok trend. I wanted everyone to be out there trying to do it. And I mean, we could call it the DiFilippo. So I'm not going to lie. I tried. It went about 10 yards. And then I was like, okay, we're gonna leave it there.
But that's all. Up with you, we'll try and push it a little more.
Just call it the flip. Just coin it the flip.
We had we have three Jesses on the team, and so at the beginning we were trying to figure out like nicknames and stuff, and I was like, oh, just call me the flip or like flip, and everyone laughed in my face and just said like no. So that didn't happen.
We could be like nicknames on this show. We'll call you the flip.
I know, because it's part of your Insta name is Jess the Flip,
it
right?
It is. Yeah. Friends of my family, like my uncles, my dad, when they played sports, they were kind of like known as the Flip. So we all just kind of kept the name within the grandchildren and just kept going. And yeah.
This could be like something to seize upon for merch. It could be like, I don't give a flip. And then like just sell that everywhere.
Yeah. Someone was saying,
you can throw me like 10% if you want.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, we're already negotiating. I love this. One, we need marketing, we need percentages. But yeah, someone said I need to do like a flip for a celebration. So,
oh my gosh,
practice that one.
If you do that, that would be like totally epic. And there could be like a Esca flavor called the flip. Which
Once
would
I
be
Holden Escobar.
You Holden Escobar. Esca, if you're listening, you have two, yeah, like not is. Just two, but we love you. Jess, what is your favorite water?
Esca, obviously.
Esca, reach out to us. We know our people. Reach out to the broads. We'll connect everybody. Sigs and Shireen, are we good to move on to rapid fire before we let Jess go?
Yeah, I need you to send me the questions again because I'm using my phone and they're on my phone. So if you could just send them again to me.
Oh, boy. Yes, I can do that. Sigs, it looks like you had one more question.
Oh, no, I'm good.
You're good?
I think so. Well, no, I wanted to ask the follow-up to the nickname question. If no one's calling you the flip on the team, then what are they calling you? Are you the original Jess? Are you?
Yeah, I'm Jess. So I lucked out. We have a Jesse and we have JC.
JC, yeah.
So it kind of worked out. But we have a lot of J names on the team. So it was like hard to like come up with nicknames. But everyone's got them down except Nikki. Nikki will just say different names for everybody.
She's got her own catalog?
Yeah, she's got her own catalog. That's for sure.
I love that.
Okay, I'm going to ask the first question, and then Shireen, I'm going to send you the rest, okay, so that we can alternate here. So, yeah. Jess, we've got you for like 3 or 4 more minutes. This is just rapid fire, whatever comes to mind first, okay? So you need to gain weight quickly for a movie role. What is your go-to junk food to reach your goal and put on the weight?
Oh, my goodness. A pizza.
Oh, what kind of pizza?
Like a Meat Lover's. I love just throw, okay. And then this is controversial. Maybe add some pineapple.
Oh, that's very controversial. Oh, yeah. But we love it.
But also, love it. I don't know if it's just a Montreal thing, but like an all dress pizza.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
That was my mom's favorite.
Really?
What is an all dress pizza?
Yeah. Why is it just a Montreal thing?
I don't know. Because I'm an all dress pizza, meat, right? And I'll just remind you what's on it.
Green peppers and pepperoni.
Mm.
Yeah, that was just deluxe.
That's a deluxe.
Oh, okay.
So ask for a deluxe.
We're special. We're special in Montreal. That's
we really are.
Yeah.
Am I next? I'm next.
Yeah, go on, Sigs.
Okay, if you're not listening to of the moment or popular tunes, what decade of music are you listening to?
My dad was a huge Bruce Springsteen fan. So I had like the Bruce Springsteen, like on Broadway. And sometimes I just like play the whole thing through in the car.
Nice.
Okay. Wait a second. Springsteen on Broadway.
Yeah. I was going to ask that.
He did.
You have to explain.
He did like a show. I didn't even go, but my dad went with his brothers and it was in New York. And I think he did like a couple shows where he just would like talk about his life and then go into like a song that he sang and kind of like talk about it. And then I don't know. I think he was like sitting the whole time just singing. But then I went to go see him live in Montreal too with my family. And that was, I was like amazed at how long he was performing for at his age. I was like, there's no way I could do this.
I know.
So Springsteen.
Do you think the same about us when we're on broadcast? You're like, wow, look at them at their age.
No. I'm like, that's where I want to be when I'm their age.
I love that. Okay, so maybe like a Selly, like when you score in the second year, you can do the Courtney Cox with Bruce Springsteen. You know the move when he pulls her on stage?
No movement. Like I cannot. It's
what?
Really bad. No, it's really bad. There's no bone in my body that like TikTok dances, I can't. Don't even. It'll take me 2 hours and I'll get it wrong.
This is so refreshing for me to hear.
Yeah.
Like I feel pretty excited. We get our TikTok. Okay. We have a one take rule, Jess. The three of us do TikToks pretty often. We have a one take rule. Whatever happens, that's what's going.
Yeah.
Every single TikTok you would post, I would fail if I was in them.
No, but that's not failure.
You'd be fine.
Yeah, I'm good. Guys, I definitely,
My follow-up to the music question is, who's the team DJ, like who's on aux?
I would say me, mostly, but we do share it around, like in the gym and stuff. I think that one down is like, okay, it's my day. Like everyone will have different days, but I think pregame, always take it.
Okay. And what's your, like, what's your playlist? Like what's your, like, give us like top three songs.
There's, I mean, we have such a like large range of different people in our locker room, but we'll add some like Bad Bunny, you'll get some Drake, you'll get some EDM, some house, you'll get some Pitbull, like literally everything, because yeah, there's, everyone likes different stuff. And then there's recommendations. There's always like, hey, can you play this? You know, I'm like, yeah, add it to the list. We have like an ongoing playlist and I'm just like, hey, send me some songs if you want them added.
Nice. So
it's kind of like everyone's playlist.
I'm next in this rapid fire. That's more of a slow spray.
Yeah, it's not so rapid. It's a meandering fire.
Meandering fire. Just what NSL team do you love to play against? And what player do you hate playing against?
Should I set Friday up and say Toronto is my favorite team to play against? I'll put that out there right now. And then the second one was the, what was the second one?
Well, like, what is there a player that you hate playing against?
No, honestly.
There's nobody who gives you a hard time in the box, like on set pieces, even though you're pretty dominant. There's nobody that you hate to run into in the box.
I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of people I don't like running into in the box. I'm like, how do I? And then nothing's called either. Controversial, but everything's done on the low. So I'm like, that's what I got to figure out this season. It's like, how do I get around these people? But everyone has experience. I think there's a lot of good center backs in this league. They're all a little bit annoying to play against. I think like Ottawa's backline was very strong this year, and I think we've had a lot of trouble with them. And I think we did really well last year is we had a really good front line, and so it was hard to kind of cover everybody. And I think that's what we're hoping to bring this year is like, hey, all of us need to be dominant so that they can't just get one person, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I love that. I'm next. You get to meet your sports hero. Who was it or who is it and why?
Probably Ibra from like soccer player. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think obviously he just was like this confident striker who didn't really care about outside perspectives. And I think when I got older and was seeing like just the world of soccer and how it worked and how there's a lot of ups and downs, and like having a bit of his attitude was what was going to get you to the next level. Like you really needed to believe in yourself and have confidence in yourself to push through like the people that probably didn't want to support you or didn't cheer for you. And yeah, I think I learned a lot from him and him dominating as well and just scoring some crazy goals. So yeah, it was fun to watch and entertaining.
Nice. Let's do one more each. Okay, guys? Okay. So we can let Jess go.
You're next, Sig.
I am? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, if you weren't playing soccer, what sport would you be playing professionally?
I played basketball for a while, so I'd probably say basketball. Yeah, my mom's a little sad about that one. I was going for the provincial teams, trying to go for the national teams, and I was like, oh, I'll just go the soccer route. And my mom now is like, we could go for the basketball route. But up to me from a really young age, I would say tennis.
Okay.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah.
I want you to answer in the Zlatan Ibrahimovic way. You have to refer to yourself in the third person now because that's what he does, and I love that. So you have a week off. Jess, where are you vacationing? Where are you going?
Jessica is vacationing.
Very nice. No,
wow. Where are we? What's the season? This is all dependent.
You choose.
You decide. You choose. Wow.
I love Europe, summer or winter. Like, I will walk the streets. I will sit in a coffee shop, read a book, or sit by a pool. Like, I can do both. I just love the vibe in Europe, like, just buying groceries for that day. I think I, like, really thrive there. Like, the lifestyle, I love it. But, yeah, I'm adventurous, too. Like, I would want to go somewhere, like, unexpected. Maybe, like, Vietnam or, I don't know, something crazy. but I need to find someone to do it with me. I like solo traveling, but sometimes it's nice to have a friend.
Yeah, 100%. So I said that was the last question. Those were the last questions. But mm-hmm. if you're in a cafe in like a lovely little quaint European city, what is the coffee order in front of you?
People are going to get mad, but it's usually just the black coffee or Americano. It's probably comes from growing up in an Italian household. But and if I'm going really special, I'll get like a flat white.
Okay. Perfect.
Very good answers all around. I approve.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
We will. Hey, listen, maybe not just Esca as a sponsor, maybe we can get some, you know,
yes,
companies like yes,
I'm all in that. Yeah. One I definitely will push for sure. Okay.
We'll go in together.
Colombians on the team to
see, now you're thinking business marketing. You're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I graduated in it, so
okay.
Yeah. Ooh. Probably what I would do afterwards is something with marketing and sports. And yeah, I love it. I think it's so fun.
Well, sounds good. We will dive into that next time because you have to come back on the Broads. Maybe we'll hit you up like mid-season and we'll compare inaugural year to year two, see how you're doing. But we're expecting big things from you this year. Congrats again on the championship and best of luck at the beginning of this season.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at @footyprimeig and on Twitter at @footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Amy out. Sig's out. Shereen out.
Oh, peace signs aren't cool anymore. Sorry, I can't do that anymore.
Oh, they're not?
You know what? We can
no, they're not.
Do it. Who said that?
I don't know.
Well, you heard it somewhere.
I heard it. I don't know. Maybe I read it in like a TikTok.